Little request from listener Maria. Her love of her life is incarcerated in a jail. And she just says, please tell him hi for me. So we shall do that, Maria. And hopefully your boyfriend will get out soon. Hopefully he's paid his dues and whatever his crime may have been, that it wasn't none too serious. And welcome back with Albert Taylor. Albert, the EVPs, do you happen to have any
Yes,
close
I
by?
did. And I was looking on the web because I hadn't heard. You mentioned that you said the late Raymond Moody. I think he's still
Is
alive.
he still
Sorry
alive?
out there, if Raymond, if you're out there.
Maybe I killed him off. I've been known to do that on this program before, and then unfortunately, they pass on a few months later.
Oh, man, a premonition.
But well, I'm going to check into that.
Okay, this first one is kind of interesting. This gentleman was engaged to this woman who was about, he was, I think he's in his 40s, and she was in her early or mid-20s. And she developed a liver disease of some sort and slowly died of some kind of poisoning. And about maybe 3 weeks after her death, and she was buried, he received this message on his answering machine. Now we investigated the along with his permission, the source of the answering machine, and the phone company said they could not figure out where it came from. And it happened on two different occasions, and I just happened to have one of them. I played this for a lot of different people, and no one seems to be able to tell what it says. We have categorized EVPs in three different categories. Category A is discernible, where you can understand every word, and category B is semi-discernible, where you just pick out bits and pieces. And then, of course, there's category C, where you just can't tell what it is, but you can tell it's some kind of voice. So this one is the machine, the message that was left on his machine.
Okay, let's listen to it.
Let me start it over here.
All right.
Whoops. Whoops. Okay, one more time. Whoops. One more time. That's the one.
Yeah, all right.
That's one.
We're
And this
heard.
one, I'm going to turn it down because it seems to be coming on quite loud. Now, this one was at a Canoga Park residence where a lady said that she kept seeing a little girl and several people in something like 18th century wear. What we did is, those of you people who don't know how to do an EVP, it's very, very simple. You don't have to have sophisticated recording equipment, audio recording equipment. Basically, there's two different types of EVP collection. One of them is active, and the other one is passive. Active is where you ask questions. The passive one is where you just sit in a room very quiet and you just let the tape recorder run. Now, this happens to be an active EVP attempt where one of my investigators asked the question, "Why do you keep coming here?" And then out of nowhere, we didn't hear at the time, but we played it back. There was a voice on the tape, and here it is.
Why do you keep coming here?
I'll
that
play it one
was,
more time.
Yeah, all right.
Why do you keep coming here?
Now, I have to tell you, there was no little girl there. It sounds like she's saying, "We don't know for sure. I'm trying to leave."
That was
But
pretty good there, Albert,
it was.
considering you're playing it on a tape recorder over the phone.
Yeah, well, I'm playing it on my computer, really.
Yeah, okay.
But it's still, I'm holding it up to the computer speakers,
yeah.
And it did, you could hear it very well. There was no little girl there. That was an interesting voice, and it did sound like she was in, it's an interactive EVP because it's responding to the question, meaning to me that implies that it's aware of us.
Now, Dr.
So.
Moody is alive. He's going to be 63 this year. He
Great.
lives in Las
Great.
Vegas.
I would hate to that have happened, and I would hate to have had that happen. I didn't know about it.
Sorry about that, Raymond.
I was shocked.
You're
I was.
Very much, though you deal with near-death experiences, you are still alive and well.
God bless Raymond Moody. His research is amazing. I was in Greece with him, and this is that he planted the seed which led to the psychomantium, which I will share.
Isn't
later.
It Elizabeth Kubler-Ross who has died?
Did I hear that?
Yeah, she.
I don't know. I know I corresponded with her.
I think she. Boy, I hope I don't kill her off
but
too.
I don't know if she passed. I know she sent me a letter. She said her eyes were failing or something like that, and she couldn't really respond very well and write anymore. But that was the last I heard from her.
The last time I talk about whether someone's alive or dead or not,
Yeah, you may want to wait and just do some research on that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Before putting them in the grave
just
before
do a little
while they're still warm. Okay, now this one I think is really interesting. This was also in the Canoga Park because the lady claimed that she was also seeing a man accompanying the people in the 18th century attire. This is my voice. You'll hear on me. You'll hear me ask, "What is your name?" And then, of course, you pause. When you collect EVPs, you ask the question, and you pause for about 30 seconds before you ask another question to give time, because we don't know what kind of time they may not be operating in our time zone, our time frame. So you give time, give the anomaly a chance to respond. And this is the one that I recorded. And you tell me if you can tell me what he said his name is.
Okay.
Whoops. Start over.
I heard him say something. We couldn't tell what he said.
Okay. I hear it's Johnny. Johnny. So that's we call that one Johnny. And I think it's interesting because there's nothing there. It's just me.
I gotta tell you, though, overall, and you can hear those on your website, right?
Yes, yes, yes. And we're adding
those
more.
Those are pretty good, considering.
We're trying to add more. And I mean, we just changed to Haunted 911 from another website, so bear with us. In a couple of days, we will have a host of others on there, and people can listen to them over a period of the next few months or so.
What kind of equipment did you use when you recorded
that those? One was a, I think that was a digital recorder.
Okay.
We have reel-to-reel digital. We have just a cheap kind of, cassette player, a little bit of everything. And sometimes what I really like this is that when we're filming with a digital video camera, it actually, we catch EVPs on the soundtrack of the camera. So you get to see something. We have an anomaly flying through the room, and you hear a voice at the same time.
Do you believe in reincarnation, Albert?
Yes, I do.
Me too.
Yeah, for a lot of reasons, because of experiences that I've had out of my body. Okay, now this one I think is really interesting. This is at a haunted or a so-called haunted church in Anaheim, California. People were saying that they felt that they were being watched by something. Windows and doors were opening by themselves. There were bangs and strange noises in the middle of the night or late night in the place. So this was about 3 o'clock in the morning. We're sitting in the dark of this this place, and we have the recorders going. This is a passive EVP. Now, you'll hear a lot going on here, and all of it is an EVP. So you'll hear someone moaning constantly, like, like that. No one was doing that. And then you'll hear a man's voice, which is a category C, which we can't make out. And then the last one is a category A,
okay,
which I won't tell you what it is, and you tell me.
Okay. Here we go.
Back up.
All right. This is live radio.
Okay, I'll play it one more time.
Help me.
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
Help me.
Help me. Exactly. The first one, we couldn't, it said, the first syllable we couldn't make out. The second one was out, you get out, or something like that. There was a female or soft-spoken voice in there moaning, and then the very last one was get out.
Albert, I've got to tell you, we've had a lot of guests on who bring EVPs. Your short clips here are some of the best I've heard.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm astounded, George. I'm so skeptical. I didn't think we'd get anything. I'm astounded at what we've collected. I'm amazed, and I feel so fortunate and so lucky that our group has actually gathered audio and video data and other types of data.
Put your scientist hat on for a moment. What is your theory about what an EVP is?
I think it's a mental communication of sorts because, if it were normal speech, like what I'm using now to move air through my vocal cords, since it's not the sound is not originating through something moving air, because we would be able to hear it with our own ears, and we can't. I think it's some kind of conscious mental projection or communication or telepathy that our devices and our technology has stumbled upon being able to record that. It never was our intent, but somehow we've bridged the gap, and now we're able to record these mental images, mental expressions.
Well, good job. Elizabeth Kubler-Ross is dead, by the way, so we got that one right.
Oh, okay.
She was a giant in the
field.
I
will cherish the letter that she wrote me.
I'm telling you, she's a giant in the field.
Right.
Absolutely.
Now, this one...
how many do you have?
I have a lot, but I'm only going to play one more. I can only find more.
All right.
I have a 30, maybe 40 of all kinds of things. It's just amazing
stuff.
Okay,
yeah, that is amazing.
Yeah, but this one is... you remember the movie The Shining, of course.
Oh, yeah.
And remember the little kid kept saying red rum?
Yes.
Well, sometimes when we have a category C, we have to call it something. We can't just, you know, a file number is hard to remember. You know, 00123, whatever. We don't do that. So we try to make sense of what we hear. And this one we labeled red rum. And I'm going to let you listen to it, and you probably will see why.
All right. Here's Johnny.
Okay.
You remember that?
Let's play it one more time.
All right, that's fast.
One more time.
Red rum.
Now, in that, there's a male voice and a female voice, and it sounds like they're repeating the same thing.
But they're saying red rum,
yeah,
aren't they?
It sounds like it. So we labeled it red rum.
One more time.
Okay, one more time. Back it up.
Yeah,
and you hear the high-pitched voice, the female boy or whatever, that says, sounds like red rum, and then you hear the male that repeats it. So we call that one red rum.
Have you ever been frightened on one of your investigations?
George, I always tell people I'm not smart enough to be scared. I am so curious, and which is strange, is odd, because when I was a child, because of having all these paranormal experiences and things sitting on my edge of my bed and calling my name, I was terrified. But as an adult, I am so curious. The thought of personal harm or having a reason to be afraid doesn't even come to mind. I'm that kind of person now that, you know, when you see this event or a tragedy going on and somebody doesn't put down the camera and they keep on filming, that's me. No matter what happens, I keep the recorder going and I keep the videotape going and the video camera going, and I record it. So I would say, to date, out of all the investigations, and I've been in some really weird places, at 3 o'clock in the morning at a 200-year-old abandoned, haunted, allegedly haunted graveyard, I don't get scared.
Have you ever witnessed a spirit attack?
I witnessed the one on the little girl that I told you about.
Yeah.
While I was walking through this one cemetery, which is also listed on, I think, the top haunted places in California, it's the top, one of the top 20 haunted places that's listed. It's called Evergreen Cemetery in Riverside. It's about 200 years old. Some of the graves date back to the 1800s and 1700s or so. It's very old. While I was walking through the graveyard, I'm looking through the camera on night vision, and I see something on the ground floating at a rapid rate toward me. I don't know what it was. I couldn't see with my regular eyes, but I could see it through the night vision scope in the camera. It didn't scare me. I didn't run. I just tried to follow it. It was coming directly for me, and it went by my legs, and I lost track of it from that point on.
What recommendations would you tell people who are petrified that they're being haunted in their homes?
Well, I think the big thing about it, like the analogy I gave you about the dog, if you are afraid, there's a chance that you will be a victim, and it will fuel the fire, so to speak, of the paranormal episode. Realize this. Be aware that you have just as much power, awareness, or control over the situation as the entity or the anomaly does. So if you know that beyond a shadow of a doubt, and this has been repeated many times in our investigations, the situation will either control itself or even cease to exist. But if you're, but almost 100%, if you are afraid, it will escalate.
Well, that's true, but there's sometimes, even beyond fear,
yeah,
you can't stop
this. And it's not absolute. Sometimes I had this one case where this lady was being attacked no matter where she went. She was following her. She called me from Las Vegas on vacation. at 3 o'clock in the morning. It was attacking her. There was nothing we could do. It was a tragic situation, but we tried everything, and there was nothing we could do to help her.
And so what happens to someone like that? I mean, can they die? Can they get killed by this?
She's still alive. She's decided to throw herself into a particular religion, and she's being absorbed in that, and that seems to bring her some kind of peace of mind. But the series of attacks were so bad that her husband would sleep on the couch and not sleep in the bedroom.
Why do some people get attacked and others don't, Albert?
That's a good question. We don't have a pattern for that. I have investigated an 82-year-old woman living by herself after her husband died. She had to move out of their house into a duplex. She was being attacked. I have to tell you about that. I can't just brush over this one. It's so interesting.
All right, go ahead.
I get a call from this woman. We go to the house, my investigator and I. And the first thing I notice is that there are the house is cluttered with things that you would normally see in a big Victorian home. Beautiful, beautiful things, but very, very congested. Now, I said to her, I said, so what's going on here? And she says, this thing comes out of, and this picture's on the web, so if people would like to see it, this thing comes out of this bathroom, and it comes up onto my bed, and it attacks me. And I said, well, what do you mean by attack? And she said, it bites me. And I said, do you have bite marks? And she said, yes, I do. I said, can I see them? So she pulls up her nightgown, and I'm looking at her inner thigh, and here's this horrible bruise of a oval teeth pattern, like as if you had a dentures and you just grabbed both dentures and you grabbed a hold of the meat on her leg.
Was this like an entity sex attack?
Yeah, that's what I was getting to that. At first, I was wondering, but she hadn't gotten to that part yet.
I see, I'm always too curious with my questions. I jump ahead all the time.
So the first thing I did is I said, do you wear dentures? Because I don't know, George. She could have bitten herself. I don't know.
That's possible.
So she said no.
I said, take the dentures out, bite herself, and put them back up?
Exactly. I don't know.
No.
You know, I want to give her the... But so she said no. And I said, can I see? And she said, yeah. So I wiggled
Albert,
her tooth.
Did you ask her that? What a shrewd line that was. Can I see?
Well, I wiggled her tooth to make sure.
I'm sure you did.
We don't know. And then I said, well, can you tell me more about the attacks? And she said, well, this is how she described it. You know how when a man makes love to you without the love? And I said, what do you mean? She said, it's sexual and it's violent. And I said, well, what have you done in the past? What happens? She said, well, one time I put salt. Someone told me to put salt around my bed because this thing couldn't walk over the salt. We've heard that many times, I'm sure. We've seen in movies and things like that. And she said, the next morning when I woke up, all the salt from the floor was in my bed, which is interesting.
That's weird.
Yeah. She said, I had my niece staying with me because I felt that if I weren't alone, maybe it wouldn't happen. And it woke us both up in the middle of the night, and I grabbed my Bible, and it knocked the Bible out of my hand. Now, all of this is just her testimony, except for the bite marks. I don't really know if this is all happening. So this is what I decided to do. I got a camera, and I decided to go around the apartment and her duplex and take pictures. I took a total of 56 photos in this house.
Of what?
Of just the environment.
All right.
And it just so happened that two out of 56 photos came out severely distorted on a digital camera. If you know, a digital camera is very difficult to distort. And it just so happened that those two pictures were taken of the very area that she said this thing came out of to attack her. Those pictures are on the website. Very distorted doorways. Just two pictures. The rest of the other 54 pictures came out perfectly normal.
Excellent. Well, stay with us. When we come back, Psychomentium. Dr. Raymond Moody is alive. I think I was confusing him, by the way, with Robert Monroe, the great expert on astral projection. He's dead. Raymond Moody is alive. We'll be back with Albert Taylor. He's alive in just a moment. Well, next hour, we'll open up the phone lines for Albert Taylor. If you want to share some of your haunted stories, you're more than welcome. Back in a moment at Coast to Coast AM. So, of course, red rum held up to a mirror, would it not, Albert? Would it say murder?
Yeah, definitely. Kind of strange.
It is. Psychomentium.
Psychomentium.
Tell me about that. Give me a definition.
Well, basically, it has its roots in scrying, which scrying is gazing into reflective surfaces, crystal balls, that type of thing, and seeing images. Well, it originated in Rome by the oracles of Delphi, which they would set up a reflective surface. It wasn't a crystal ball, but it was a reflective surface, and they would tell people to come and sit and gaze into that, and that they would have encounters with deceased relatives. So that's where it began. Now, fast forward, 10 years ago, I was in Greece with Raymond Moody, and we were lecturing, and he started telling me about this. And I found it fascinating, and I didn't really think I would do anything about it, but little did I know he planted a seed. So about 5 years ago, I kept thinking that's something, because his book was coming out, which is, I think, Visitations. And I kept thinking, I wonder if that would be a really good research project for my paranormal group. It was one of the first research projects. So we decided to construct this psychomantium per the specifications that Raymond laid out in his book and other specifications that we found throughout the web. Thank God for the web. You don't have to go to the Britannica anymore.
So true.
So it does have certain parameters. It has a mirror. It has to be a certain height above the ground. It has to have the walls have to be a flat, black, non-reflective surface, preferably velvet curtain of some sort like that. It has to have a very comfortable chair that is situated about 3 feet from the mirror, the chair has to be adjusted so that when you lay back in the chair, you cannot see yourself in the mirror. It also has to have a single dim light source that you place behind the chair. And we have all of that. And so what we did is we added to that where we have temperature sensing equipment inside probes where we can measure the various temperature changes, if any, and throughout the entire psychomantium. It's a small booth. It's not very big, about the size of a nice rectangular elevator. We also have night vision cameras that we can watch the person sitting in the chair, and we can also look into the mirror to see if we have any images. Outside of the psychomantium is a control booth that has a computer system that controls all the cameras, and you can monitor and record anything that's going on inside the booth and outside in the control area. Because what we found is when paranormal activity begins, it's not limited to just inside the walls of the psychomantium. It bleeds over. So one of the things that happened while we were constructing this, and we first hooked up the cameras. Now, I'm sitting at the computer control station, and I had one of my investigators was inside the psychomantium constructing it still, hanging curtains, rods, painting the walls black, and putting flat black carpet in and things like that. Now I'm looking at the monitor, and there's something moving around inside the psychomantium that's transparent. The first thing I thought was that it was the reflection off of his watch crystal. I thought that's what it was.
Sure.
And it happened several times, and then the one time I saw it, it was three-dimensional, hovering straight toward the camera and disappearing. And I said to him, could you come out here for a second? And he came out, and I examined his arm. He didn't have a watch on, which I thought was interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And while we both sat there looking at the video camera, we both saw some things, not very big, about the size of a Mr. Potato Head, moving around inside the psychomantium. Fascinating, okay? I didn't know what that was. That was the beginning. Little did I know that that was just a small aspect of what was to come. Another thing we did is we have an EEG machine where we hook up the participant to EEG where we can monitor brain waves.
Okay.
And so we can tell when their eyes are open, when they're getting data from their optic nerve, and we can tell when they're at a high level of meditative level, and we can tell when they're dreaming and sleeping. We can monitor all of that from the outside.
Now, Eva, let's set up a technique so people at home, whenever they want, can gaze into a mirror. Set the stage here. What are they supposed to do?
Okay, first, like I said, you can't see yourself in the mirror. You have to be below the mirror. The room has to be very, very dark, and you can't have anything glowing on the walls or something that you can see in the mirror.
So
that
there's no light in this room at all?
No light. Oh, except for one light behind you, behind a chair of some sort. But you don't
see that in the mirror, or do you?
No, you won't see that because you're below the mirror.
All right.
Behind you and you're below. So when you look in the mirror, you can't have anything reflective because you will see that in the mirror, and it will draw your eye to it.
How can you look in the mirror if you're below it? I mean,
you're still looking up into it.
All right. So you got to be
on a slight angle. You're not.
You got to be. You have to be close to it.
Yeah. Plus, the mirror is tilted from the bottom out inward toward you about maybe 10 to 15 degrees. So that creates the angle where it's not at you directly.
But you can't see yourself.
No, you cannot see yourself.
All right.
And there's a reason for that. You don't want to see anything in the mirror that you can focus on, at least of all yourself. You don't want to see anything on the wall behind you, on the walls on the side of you, that because your eye will be drawn to that. And what happens is, when you sit in this chair and you're looking into this mirror, it all of a sudden the walls disappear. You feel as if you're out in the middle of this vast black void.
Just floating in the universe somewhere. Okay.
And then what happens is the mirror ceases to be like a two-dimensional or flat surface and appears to have an extreme depth to it.
How long does it take before this starts to happen?
About a good 15 minutes.
Okay.
I recommend no less than 30 minutes in the psychomantium, preferably an hour.
No music, nothing.
No music, but that's another experiment. But generally, in the beginning, no sounds whatsoever. You want to even wear earplugs to block out.
I know. Are you trying to conjure up a spirit? What are you trying to do?
What you're trying to do, you're not conjuring anything. Is what you're doing is you're inducing an altered state and meeting the phenomena halfway. Our five senses block out a lot of paranormal occurrences that are around us every day.
Then what's the purpose of the mirror? What is that supposed to do?
Well, that allows your mind to look beyond just a flat wall. Normally, because if you would focus in on the wall and that would be the reality of the room. But the mirror causes an illusion where you start looking beyond that. And when you look beyond that, that causes you to start kind of drifting into a slight altered state.
So you're saying if you go to search psychomantium,
mm-hmm.
You'll come up with techniques on how to do all this too, so in case people have missed this tonight?
Definitely. Okay. There's so much information out there. There are several people who have built one, but there doesn't seem to be a lot of them that are in existence. There's three in California that I know of. There may be a few others here and there, but there's only, not very many people have built one. I suggest anybody do this. Now, one of the things I want to say is there's nothing to be afraid of. No one has been injured. In fact, it's just the opposite. People have had closure with relatives that they didn't expect to see.
So you don't have a spirit that's going to reach through the mirror
No.
and pull you in? Or
No.
Like...
In the beginning, what happened is people would see cloudy-like images forming. Then clients would see relatives that they hadn't thought about. They were thinking about their mother, but their grandmother or their uncle came. Someone, and this would happen to be someone that they had unfinished business with. They, and also while they're staring into them, now they start hearing an audible sound, voices, them talking to them. And it slowly led up to actual two-way communication.
I got to tell you, it's kind of spooky to stare and you see this thing come up in a mirror.
Well, you know,
don't you think?
George, remember as a kid how we used to do the Bloody Mary thing? Remember when you stand in the mirror and you go, Bloody Mary, Bloody Mary.
I don't remember this.
That was traces of this actual phenomenon. We as kids just made a game out of it. But that really was traces of what had happened back in 400 AD or earlier with the oracles of Delphi.
So they've been doing this for a long time.
A long, long time. So, but it's been, because it's been so long and people, it's gone underground or the people's knowledge has been forgotten. People, the kids and things like that still had rumors and superstitions about the mirror.
Albert, how do we know it's not like a Ouija board where it conjures up bad spirits?
Well, I'm glad you mentioned that because I was trying to think during the break, how would I tell you about our Ouija board experiment?
Well, there you go.
and I don't know if you want me to tell you now or what. But
might as well. I've opened it up.
Okay. One of the things I find fascinating myself is that there's so much fear surrounding the Ouija board.
Including yours truly.
Mm-hmm. There's so much.
Let me rephrase it. I'm not afraid of anything. There are things I don't like. I don't like clowns, and I don't like Ouija boards.
Mm-hmm.
But, I don't go running around screaming or anything.
And I think it's fascinating that a lot of people are afraid. They say you'll open up a portal, there's mostly bad spirits or that, all kinds of negativity. I don't hear very many positive things about it. So what we decided to do, being paranormal research investigations, the R stands for research, we decided, because it's not about our belief system, it's not about that, we decided to see if it had any mystical properties.
All right.
So what we did is we set up a very controlled environment where we had three people that did not know the questions that we were going to ask prior to. We had several different types of Ouija boards, which there are all kinds. One of them was a round one, very ancient looking.
Mm-hmm.
And then the basic Parker, the one that you can, the game kind, that you can get at almost any game store.
Sure.
And we had, and then I had three items. One was a compass, one was a camera, and the other one was a watch. The room, the place that we were in, they had multiple rooms, and each one of the rooms were numbered. So my task was to go leave the controlled area, go out into the huge building, and hide these objects in a room, and then come back, and we would ask the Ouija board to tell us what room the watch is in, what room the camera is in, and what room the compass is in.
Okay.
So while I'm outside of the room, I'm hiding the camera and the watch. And then I thought to myself, well, just to make sure that the people there aren't faking it or trying to fool me, I didn't even tell my team. I decided not to hide the compass. I decided to keep it in my pocket. So then I walked back into the room, and I said, okay, all the items are placed. But no one knew except for me that the compass was in my pocket. Now, this is a foundation of sorts. And each room, especially the main room that we were in, has a name. It's not a number. It's named after a person who helped found the foundation. The particular place that I was in, the room that I was in, the hall, was called Tipton Hall, T-I-P-T-O-N, Hall. So the first question was, where is the camera? And it gave a bogus number. It was not accurate. The second question was, where is the watch? It gave another bogus answer that it wasn't correct. Then we said, where is the compass? And I was really thinking, okay, these people are thinking it's in a room and they're going to give me another bogus number because they think that's what, you know, it's. I'm thinking it's more of a automatism is what it's called.
Mm-hmm.
So instead of giving us a number, it began to spell out something. And it began to spell out T-I-P-T-O-N. And the people everyone in the room very confused and said, we want a number. We don't want a name. And they said, give us the number of the room that it's in. And it spelled out T-I-P-T-O-N. And I was thinking, well, that's quite fascinating because I just happened to be standing in Tipton Hall, and it is in my pocket. And then I pulled the compass out, and I said, well, I think this is interesting because here it is. And, yes, we are in the room Tipton Hall. So it's not 100%. It's not even 50%. But I would say that it does have mystical properties. Now, I think of the Ouija board as, you know, picking up the phone and calling into a bus station. So whoever picks up, and you have so many different types of people in the bus station. Some of them are travelers who are very nice people, and then some of them are maybe not nice people. It's just a communication device.
Yeah, but don't you find that you have a lot of entities that are not too nice that come through a Ouija board?
Not the majority. Not the majority.
Really?
Just like the planet, the majority of people on the planet are nice. The minority is the people who aren't. So, yes, periodically you could get in contact with someone that is not nice, but the majority of times it's going to be a positive or a benign kind of communication. And this was from our experiments. We decided to do part two, which we will – PRI is ongoing. We're doing all kinds of experiments. So here coming up shortly, within the next couple of weeks, we're going to do a part two of the Ouija board experiment and see what happens.
So you have seen nothing with a Ouija board that bothers you or scares you?
Nothing yet, thus far. Very little. I haven't been scared in any of the things.
I wonder if you've been lucky.
I don't feel like a victim. I really don't. I have been on the astral plane, and I think I've been encountered worse on the astral plane than I have ever encountered in my physical body.
Have you ever seen a psychic vampire?
No. I've
You've been sheltered, Albert.
I'm familiar with people who are emotional vampires. But psychic vampire, no, I wouldn't say that.
Energy zappers?
Yes, I have been in contact with people like that. but I don't. It, to me, it's all very rare. It's not the majority. The majority of encounters and people that you deal with are positive. Thank goodness. There, it does occur, but it's like worrying about getting hit by lightning or worrying about when you go into the ocean of getting bitten by a shark. It does happen, yes, but it's rare. And most of the time, you will have a wonderful experience. That seems to be the way with the Ouija board. Now, I'm not. I've seen some people, like, for instance, a few years ago, there was the military men who got together, and you may have heard of it, where they were messing around with the Ouija board, and the frightening information that they got from the Ouija board caused them to actually go AWOL, and they were missing. And when they found them, they said, it told us all kinds of revelations about things that were horrible and they were going to happen, and it scared us to death. Well, yeah, there is some, but those things didn't manifest. They haven't yet. But yes, there are some negative information. There is negative information that you can tap into. But I don't think it's going to follow you in. You're not going to open a portal of some sort because we don't even know if portals exist. And coming out of my physical body into the astral plane, they come and go as they please. They're here and there, and I go. There doesn't seem to be some type of portal that I have to transition to get somewhere that's locked.
You know, I guess because of your attitude, and that's, you know, being very forthright, and you're not concerned, you've got positive energy, maybe that's why it doesn't affect you.
I think, and from my experience in empowering people, they weren't affected either after they were empowered. So you don't have to be a victim. There are some situations where I couldn't help the people, but the majority, you don't have to be a victim. You can empower yourself, and the situation will be positive. Just like when we do a clearing. This is the best thing I can understand about clearing a house. I think what is happening is prayer is a positive thing, and what you're doing is you're charging the environment with positive energy and thoughts. So the negative energy that was attracted there is to that particular situation is repelled now because it's only attracted to negativity and fear and things like that. I have been on investigations. Now, and this is one of the things it's an absolute rule with me, is I do not take anyone on an investigation who is afraid. No one on my team. If you're afraid, you can't go. Because of the past, I had a situation where we went to a place where there was allegedly an entity, an apparition in this particular bedroom. Well, my investigator, she was very afraid, and I said, well, go in the room and see if you can take pictures with a digital camera. She approached the room, and as soon as she stepped in the room, the digital camera failed, and it cut off. It wouldn't work. She stepped out of the room, and it cut back on. And I said, try it again. I said, the fact that it's failing may be an indication of something paranormal. She stepped in the room again, and it failed again. So she stepped back out, and it began to work. And I said, well, just run into the room and take a picture. She said, I'm afraid. I said, well, just run in there. We're watching you right here, and come back out. She ran into the room with her camera on and began and held the camera up to take a picture and then dropped the camera and immediately started grabbing her throat as if she was being choked. She said, I'm being choked. And so we pulled her out of the room, laid her on the couch, and this went on for a good 5 minutes where she felt like something was choking her. But I have to say, she was afraid. She was the only one on the team that was afraid, and she was the only one on the team that something negative happened to. So I think fear is a big thing. It's a huge hurdle for us humans to overcome fear. But when you're getting into things like this, investigating the paranormal or dealing with the paranormal in any way, it is so important that you try to suppress your fear and try to empower yourself.
So true. Spell psychomantium for us so people can search for it.
P-S-Y. Wait a minute. P-S-Y-C-H-O-M-E. A-N-T-U-M-U-T-U-E-M. Psychomantium is T-E-U-M.
T-E.
There's no I in there. There's no I.
Okay, great. Stay with us. We're going to be back with phone calls next. Give us your haunted stories or questions for Albert Taylor in a moment on Coast to Coast AM.